And welcome. We are back. Today we're going to go through some frequently asked questions, talk about FMLA for pregnant women and general FMLA questions, as well as give a couple of announcements for all of you attorneys and doctors.
You know you're out there.
Who are following me. To get free information that I put out rather than paying me, which I did give you permission to do when I started this, so I can retire, leave you guys somebody that'll want to do this after I leave. So today, we're going to get into some pretty good stuff. We're going to talk about, just in general, some frequently asked questions I've gotten a lot, and also there's some stuff that are FMLA-based that I'm going to go over, and also some announcements, like I said. So, if it's first time to DOL OWC and Federal Workers' Compensation Coffee Break Podcast, I am your host, Dr. Taylor. I'm an OWCP consultant. I work with one of the largest federal healthcare law firms in the country. I've been their consultant for, 18 years? I've been a consultant for 29 years. You can see me all over the internet on Oberheiden Law Firm. I've been assisted working with clients and attorneys and doctors for over 29 years in the work comp arena. I decided to start this a few years ago to give back to government workers and some of those doctors, and yes, doctors and attorneys that follow my podcast, by doing a free podcast to assist with all types of government-related healthcare filings. I know I have a unique skill set, and I do have cover dense information that not very many people know much about, and I do this all for you. The only thing I ask here at the podcast is that you find this information to be helpful. Please leave a review, share the podcast with others, and maybe send me an email and let me know that you benefited from the free information. Here at the podcast, we discuss all sorts of topics related to Federal Workers' Compensation, Department of Labor, OWCP, the FICA Act, Federal Employment Retirement System, Longshore Maritime, DOD Contractor, VA Benefits, etc. I cover these relevant topics in a short coffee break style format, similar to Lunch and Learn, because we like to discuss topics that are related to helping you, the government employee, with filing your claim, understanding your rights and responsibility, relevant rules, and provisions. I also like to cover topics that people are always asking me about or wanting me to cover that I receive some level of request by text and emails and phone calls, etc. And I do this to help you successfully navigate it, the difficult and convoluted waters of federal claim filing. I do this specifically to assist you, you and your doctor or your co-workers with claim filing denials or with appropriate filing of benefit claims, disability or injured work claims. So today, I'm going to go over general FMLA, FMLA for pregnant women, and some common questions that I've gotten over the last 6 months. So let's start with FMLA. Let's do a review of a previous podcast we did on FMLA. I'm just going to talk about, in general, the provisions. In order to be eligible to take leave under the FMLA, this is Federal Medical Leave Act, the employee himself must, first of all, work for a covered employer, okay? Secondly, you have to have worked 1,250 hours during a 12-month period prior to the start of filing FMLA. There is a special hour of service rule that applies to airline flight crew members. I'm not going to go over that today. Work at a location where the employer has 50 or more employees within 75 miles, and you've worked for the employer for 12 months. Now, the 12 months of employment are not required to be consecutive in order for the employee to qualify for FMLA leave. In general, only employment within 7 years is counted unless the break in service is one, due to an employee's fulfillment of military obligations, or two, it's governed by a collective bargaining agreement or other written agreement that's in your employee agreement. And there are a few of those special circumstances for select services, contractors, etc. Now, the hour of service requirement for FMLA, does the time I take off for vacation, this is a question, sick leave, or PTO count towards the 1250 hours? Answer would be the 1250 hours include only those hours actually worked for your employing agency. So paid leave and unpaid leave, including FMLA leave, are not included. Now, special hour services, we already talked about. That does not apply to airline flight crew member. If you're an airline flight crew member, just email me and I'll give you your specific differences. Now, let's talk about unpaid leave. The question is my employer required to pay me when I take FMLA leave? Well, the FMLA only requires unpaid leave. However, The federal law does permit that an employee to elect or the employer to require the employee to use accrued paid vacation leave, paid sick leave, or family leave, or some or all of the FMLA period. Now, an employee must follow the employer's normal leave rules in order to substitute paid leave, and that's negotiating your employee agreement. When paid leave is used for an FMLA-covered reason, the leave is typically FMLA-protected, and there when it would be covered. Now, qualifying questions that I get. Here's a common question. Where can an eligible employee use FMLA leave? Well, a covered employer must grant an eligible employee up to a total of 12 work weeks of unpaid job-protected leave in a 12-month period for one or more of the following reasons. Pay attention. Number one, for the birth of a son or daughter and to bond with a newborn child. That includes adoption. For the placement with the employee of a child for adoption or foster care, that's also cover for time to bond with your child, same as if you had just had a newborn child. To also to care for an immediate family member. That can be a spouse, child, or parent, but not a parent-in-law with a serious health condition. So 12 weeks for a serious health condition for family member does apply. You can also take medical leave when the employee is unable to work because of a serious health condition or for qualifying excess agencies arising out of the fact that the employer's spouse, son, daughter, or parent is on covered active duty or called to covered active duty status as a member of one of the armed forces divisions. The FMLA also allows eligible employees to take up to 26 work weeks of unpaid job-protected leave in a single 12-month period to care for a covered service member with a serious injury or illness, okay? I said exit agency. I mispronounced that. It's existing agencies. So birth and bonding. Now, this is one I've gotten a lot lately. I've had a lot of pregnant women for some reason in recent years and months in my practice in Florida. So birth and bonding questions. Are there any restrictions on when an employee can take leave for the birth or adoption of a child? Okay, leave to bond with your newborn child or newly placed adoption or foster child must conclude, okay, within the 12 months after the birth or placement. So you gotta count your 12 months going forward from the date of birth or placement. The use of intermittent FMLA leave for these purposes is subject to the employer's approval. So you still gotta fill out your 380i paperwork and it has to be approved. If the newly born or newly placed child has a serious health condition, the employee has the right to take FMLA leave to care for the child intermittently over a period of 12 weeks, if medically necessary and such leave is not subject to the 12-month limitation. Now, another question is, when can a parent take leave for a newborn? Mothers and fathers have the same rights here. This is important to remember. Whether you're a mother or father, you have the same right to take FMLA leave to bond with a newborn child or our adopted or placed child. Mother can also take FMLA leave for prenatal care, incapacity related to pregnancy, and for her own serious health conditions following the birth of a child. Now, father can also use FMLA leave to care for his spouse who is incapacitated due to pregnancy or childbirth. Remember that, guys. Now, how do I learn the status of a medical authorization request, bill, or claim for reimbursement with OWCP? Got several of these questions recently, okay? I'm going to go into some frequently asked questions. Injured workers like you and your providers and employees agencies can check on the status of bills and reimbursement on the OWCP web bill processing portal with CNSI. To speak with a customer service representative, just call 844-493-1966 and just follow the prompts. It's a phone tree. They're open Monday through Friday, 8 to 8 p.m. Eastern. Now, how do you find out what conditions OWCP has accepted on your injured worker claim? While your initial acceptance letter is including this information, it's typically going to be uploaded into the eComp portal. If you're not familiar with eComp portal, go to my previous editions of several eComp podcasts, understand them. It's an online portal where everything is placed. They usually send this one in the mail as well, but it's becoming less frequent. Now, this information, what's been accepted on your claim, is also available on your web bill processing portal with CNSI, but it's also going to be logged into your eComp. So you can log in as a claimant, an injured worker, on eComp, and you could read what your acceptance claims are either on the web bill processing portal or on eComp. From there, you would enter your case number, date of birth, and date of injury. Once logged in, you can click on the eligibility and accepted conditions link in both of those portals, and you can access the list of accepted conditions. You can help your provider by giving him or her the list of accepted conditions for your claim and by telling your provider how to access this information online. If you need help, just email me. But the OWCP web bill processing portal is where my clinic and my nurses and I, we access daily the status of everyone's claim. But you can do it. It usually is listed in eComp, but it's easier to do on the web bill processing portal. Now, another question. I think that other diagnoses need to be added as accepted conditions on my claim. What do I do? Well, if you believe that additional or different conditions warrant acceptance on your claim, you got to provide OWCP with medical documentation supporting the claim's expansion of what we call consequential conditions. And again, previous podcasts, just go in and look for previous podcasts on consequential conditions. But you can support a claims expansion and review it to the claims examiner in the eComp portal by uploading to OWCP medical documentation and medical narrative that includes your claim and case number. And on every page, and make sure it's up in the top right corner, by the way, and make it either mail it to U.S. Department of Labor, OWCP, P.O. Box 8300, London, Kentucky, 40742, or upload to the case electronically via eComp, which is much simpler. Now, what form do I submit to get reimbursed for traveling to and from my medical appointments? Probably the most common question I get in the last 6 months. There is a form that you can complete called the OWCP 957A. Go to OWCP Forms page, just internet search it, and it'll come up, and you just scroll down to the 957A. It's called the Medical Travel Refund Request-Mileage Form. If you're only claiming mileage reimbursement, complete the OWCP 957B Medical Travel Refund Request Expenses. If you're claiming reimbursement for other travel expenses in addition to or instead of mileage, you use expenses. If you're just doing mileage, do the medical travel refund request mileage. The forms, like I said, are on OWCP Medical Bill Processing Portal or the FICA Forms page. Don't forget to put your OWCP claim number on the top right side of each page of everything you submit to OWCP in eComp or by mail. All right, another question. How do I get reimbursed for out-of-pocket expenses I paid for authorized treatment, pharmacy expenses, medication, medical appliances, or medical supplies for my work-related injury? Okay, reimbursement for any of those types of expenses, whether it's pharmacy, medication, medical appliance, supplies, medical, surgical, dental services, or even doctors that are specialized that don't participate in OWCP, and there's several specialties that just do not participate in OWCP. You would fill out on that OWCP form page that we just talked about, OWCP-915, the Claimant Medical Reimbursement Form. Now, this form, like I told you before, found on OWCP Web Bill Processing Portal. Click on Resources. Under the Resources tab, it'll go to Forms and Reference Link, and then you'll find that form, 915. Put each date of service on a separate line. If you're requesting reimbursement for copay, write copay in the description of charge field. If you're requesting reimbursement for a doctor's visit that's not an approved OWCP provider and there's one available, if there's a medical device that's not covered, I did one recently for an ergonomic chair that's not listed as a DME device, wasn't codable, so the patient got it themselves and used 915 to be reimbursed. These are separate forms for you and your provider to use if you are not able to get it through traditional means and you're trying to get reimbursed for something that's not able to be reimbursed through the traditional channels in OWCP. Don't mix prescription and office visits on the same form, just for a little tidbit information. Now, a reimbursement claim for medical services, surgical services, or appliance of medical and supplies has to be accompanied by a copy of the OWCP 1500 HICFA form, which is typically the health insurance claim form that most doctors use for filing claims signed by your medical provider. Make sure you coincide that if you're going to do those particular services. Medical appliance, surgical services, medical supplies do have, they have either procedure codes or supply codes for each of those items, and they can be they need to be inputted into this electronic health insurance claim form or a paper health insurance claim form and uploaded into eCom. Now, a reimbursement claim for pharmacy expenses and medications must be accompanied by a copy of the universal claim form that we just discussed, or other pharmacy statements showing the name of the drug, the NDC code, quantity provided, cost, prescribing physician, and the date the prescription was filled in order for you to be reimbursed for a medicine that did not get covered or is not listed in its Optum in the Optum portal. All reimbursement requests must be accompanied by proof of payment. In other words, you got to give them a cash receipt or a credit card receipt, or you show them a canceled check, something. Now, you can e-comp these items or mail them to these OWCP 915 forms to either U.S. Department of Labor, OWCP, P.O. Box 8300, London, Kentucky, 40742-8300, or you can e-comp it. And all of these forms, OWCP 957 A and B forms, can be sent to eComp with a cover sheet with a brief explanation of what you're submitting to your claims examiner. Don't forget to put your name and case number in the far right-hand corner on every page. Now, lastly, I had a patient who was on temporary total disability recently that moved to another state. He'd been there for years. Claims examiner tried to cut off his benefits due to a light duty offer that was proposed from a second opinion doctor, sending him back to light duty. Now, the second opinion doctor had seen him 11 months prior, and they couldn't find him anything. Suddenly, the postmaster from his original postal duty station where he used to live 15 years ago accepted the bona fide light duty offer and sent them a letter saying that he needed to acknowledge that he was going to return to work or have his benefits cessated or terminated. Here's the problem. He does not live in his original postal workstation. It's 1,500 miles away in that example. So if you have moved away from where you used to work and you live somewhere else, there is rules in the FICA Act and the DFEC procedure manual that cover this as not being a proper modified duty assignment. So I had to recently help somebody with this one. It's called the DFEC Procedure Manual 2-0814. Basically, here's what it says. Okay, I'll read the specific, but I'm going to give you a Cliff Notes version first. You should not be sent greater than 50 miles from home for modified duty. Okay, so under 2-0814, job offers and return to work and modified duty or temporary assignments, C, subsection 2F, says the light duty assignment should be in the location where the employee currently resides. That wasn't the case in the example I gave you. Happens all the time. If this is not practical, the employing agency may provide light duty at the employee's former duty station if that station is within the claimant's commuting area of 50 miles, but most of the time it's not. Reemployment at any other location may only be considered where the distance between the location of the light duty assignment, in this case a newer light duty assignment, and the location where the employee currently resides is no greater than 50 miles and the employee is physically capable of performing the commute entailed. Special travel arrangements through vocational rehab will not be pursued for temporary assignments. So remember, if the DFE procedure rule that I just said, that I just gave you, I would copy and paste that and put it somewhere because it happens all the time. It's misused and people have their benefits cut off from it. Okay, again, that's DFEC Procedure Manual Rule 2-0814. You cannot be assigned greater than 50 miles than where you live today, right now, if you're going to be assigned to something that performs a commute. It has to be within 50 miles of where you live. Now, I want to give a couple of announcements because I know there's doctors and attorneys who follow this podcast as well. OWCP has announced some provider training sessions. So new provider orientations are on Wednesday, April 17, 2024, from 4 to 5 Eastern. You can click on the link that I provide. There's also another provider training session called Portal Refresher, how to use all the new portals, CNSI, an e-comp. That's on Friday, April the 19th, 2024, from 1 to 2. If you have a doctor that's not well-versed, or you are a doctor listening that's not well-versed in OWCP, highly recommend those refreshing courses. All right, guys. I think that does it for this episode of Federal Workers Comp Coffee Break Podcast. Before I go on further, I want to thank Becky. Becky talked me into not stopping this podcast. I was seriously considering stopping it. I felt like the information was being about half the listeners now that on the more dense material is just attorneys and doctors that are just getting information for free rather than hiring me like in the old days. And I know I'll open that door and I'm not complaining, but I just said, what's the point of continuing this if patients aren't benefited? But then I had a patient reach out to me and said, oh, no, I'm benefited and I've listened to them all the time, and it kind of recharged my battery. So Becky, you know who you are. Thanks for the shot in the arm and appreciation. I don't get a lot of feedback from the help I do. People email me and call me, text me, come see me, and I give them answers and I never see them again. I very rarely do I get anybody say, oh yeah, thanks, that really helped and worked. So I got one recently and it kind of recharged my battery. So Becky, you know who you are. Thank you. So for those of us listening, I want to thank you for listening. I want to remind you to share this podcast with other federal workers you think would benefit from this information. Also, be kind enough to leave a review on whatever podcast platform you found this podcast on. So most of you listen to me through Apple Podcasts and Google's new platform or some of the other podcast places. Nobody ever leaves me a review. I've been doing this for years. Kind of funny that I think I have 3 reviews in like 4 years. But I would appreciate it if you did it. It helps my podcast get found by other people when they do searches. So that's how it's mutually beneficial to you and to me. Also, if you need an approved medical provider for your DOL, OWCP, or longshore case in Florida, Georgia, Pensacola, in the southern Alabama, Mississippi, and Georgia area, as well as my primary location in Tampa, you can reach out to me and for a consultation or make an appointment to discuss your case. Or if you know someone else in Florida who's recently injured, you can call the clinic at 813-877-6900 or go to website fedcompconsultants.com or to mrtherapycenter.com. By the way, if you're making an appointment, there's other doctors that work in the office. Some of them have similar names, like Dr. Thomas has a name similar to mine. Some people looking for me get assigned to the wrong doctors, and it doesn't go well because he has no idea what you're there for whenever I do. So be sure and ask for me by name and say, I want to see Dr. Taylor. All right, I need to go warm up this coffee and get going. I just want to thank all of you who put on that uniform, that badge, deliver that mail, take care of our veterans, and make this big government run. This is my big thank you. We cannot do all of this without you. And remember, if you have a federal injury claim and you need assistance, I'm here to help. Off to get my coffee. See you next time.